then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more door for signal token, whistle out the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. From many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's October the 5th, 2017. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, we got a new guy on board who is in the first flush of his enthusiasm for the party in the Northwest Republic. His name's Brian, and like most new guys in his first flush of initial enthusiasm, he's really going to town. Brian is putting together an internet ad campaign designed to get people to click on northwestfront.org. And as near as I can figure from the stat counter and some of the contact requests I'm getting through the website, it's starting to have an effect, to the point where I think you guys need to hear from the man himself.
Hey guys, this is a new dude down in California. I'm not going to call myself a comrade because I'm far away at this time. Wanted to introduce myself and tell you a bit about what I'm working on. I came to be in this place because after Charlottesville, I realized, hey, too late. None of this stuff's going to work anymore. What am I going to do? It was pretty depressing. I won't spend a lot of time on all of this, except I realized something else has got to happen. Somehow I came across some lead to the Northwest Front and the books and say, wow, these dudes have a plan and it's a decent plan. It's a feasible plan. This is awesome. So I was pretty happy with that. I'm going to try to keep this down to 10 minutes, so I'm going to truncate everything because I've got something I need to tell you folks. But as you know from Harold's many podcasts, the state of the Northwest Front, it's not at the action-adventure stage yet that is pictured in the novels. It is more at a building, a recruiting stage, building the infrastructure so that when it's time for action, we will be ready to act. More people need to know the Northwest Front is here and that it's got a feasible plan and it's probably the only remaining option that is any good at all. So we need to find more people. We need to find the unknown leader that everybody hopes to have. We need to find more of the right people. So the purpose of this little talk today is about advertising campaigns. There are some really nice features about advertising campaigns. You can all do these things. They're really quite easy to do. I can tell you a bit about that if you need to know more. They are very useful because they have a tremendous reach and you can find people that had no idea we were there and we don't actually know who we need anyway. We don't know where the people we need are, and they don't know we're here. We got to find people. We got to get them to come here. We need the message to get out. This is what advertising campaigns are going to do. Also, it's cool because if you feel frustrated that there's nothing to do, well, you can be useful. You can be active immediately, sitting right there in your chair without leaving your computer, which is what a lot of people really like to do. Even though we need to get out of this sitting in behind the computer phase of activities. Also, advertising campaigns is good practice for certain kinds of operations you might have to run someday. You're going to try to do something, but you don't want everybody to know who you are, where you are, what's going on. This is good practice for that kind of operation, especially with online operations. One of the negatives about ad campaigns is they are subject to anonymous complaints and shutdown requests, so you do have to craft these things rather carefully. So I'll tell you a bit about different kinds of ad campaigns. There's trolling, such as you're going to be trolling the chat rooms. These could be considered an ad, at least as PR of some kind. Trolling of chat rooms, Twitter, forums. meme campaigns. I know somebody in the Northwest Front's been making memes. There's generic campaigns like running ads in various publications online and maybe newspapers. Billboard campaigns are really cool too. I've got some experience with these things. One of the problems with, trolling. Trolling of chat rooms, Twitter, and forums, and in the comment sections of videos. There's some hazards there. First of all, you're kind of stuck in the echo box, and really, we need some talk in the echo box because there's people who don't know we exist, and there are people already, but our advertising campaigns really need to get out of the echo box. And when you're a troll, you always run the risk of looking like a real asshole or a shill or whatnot, so you might get discredited. You run the risk of looking poorly when you enter the interactive propaganda front like that. So there's some bad involved in trolling. Meme campaigns are subject to the similar thing that you're subject to being stuck in the echo box. They're cool because they're easily digestible cognitive boxes, so if somebody sees it, they grasp it instantly if they're well done. However, to actually do those things well, I don't know if it's really well understood what it takes to be good at those things. There's kind of natural skill you need, and you need some level of graphic skills. Billboard campaigns. Those things are really cool. I've run some of those. I'm looking for some help to run more if you're interested, but they are very costly. They're harder to design without getting a backlash, because anybody driving by can call the billboard company and say, shut it down. And the billboard company doesn't care about politics. They're just making money. They're just running a business. If somebody threatens the company, the lawyers at the company are going to say, shut it down. They have a very limited reach because they're stuck in the ground and only people driving by can see those things. But the good point of that is you can leverage local knowledge to get your message out more effectively. So if folks want to do one of those things or think they can help, talk to me about this stuff. So I'm going to jump onto campaigns I'm running currently. So I've got several campaigns running currently of various effect, which is, it's interesting to run test campaigns and see what is effective and what's not. I've got some out there like white, related to white anything, the alt-right, stuff of that sort. Those, surprisingly, are almost entirely ineffective. They get some visibility, but the vendors tend to shut those down, and they don't get clicks. People aren't clicking on those ads. I have an ad out there that I thought was great, focusing on the Tolkien mythos, because those kind of people actually have the seeds of white nationalism in themselves, and it's alive. But amazingly enough, those have the lowest click-through rate of any of the ad campaigns I've got. Huge visibility, approximately zero clicks. And the text and verbosity of the ad is really tuned to pluck on the heartstrings of the Tolkien people. I believe I know those heartstrings, so I can pluck them because I love that Tolkien stuff too. The most effective ads I've got are the absolutely simplest. High click-through rate, very high, huge visibility. It's put up to leverage the disasters down in Florida. I figured there'd be a lot of people wanting to escape Florida from the hurricanes. I'm going to put up some ads keyed upon, hey, what's the best state? What's the best city? Totally simple concept. Those ads get a very high click-through rate. Those ads are based on the pioneer concept, the new pioneers. The new pioneers click here. The only sane way to go forward is click here. Those are very effective ads. So the state of the current campaign, they're always running, but these things are very expensive. Sometimes it can be $1 a click or something like this. This is expensive stuff. So the effectiveness of these campaigns is entirely related to the burn rate, the daily burn rate for these things. So it'd be great to get some help on this, and I got more to say about that later. Also, I would like some input from you folks on new ad ideas. I've got a couple because I know it'd be great to pull down some rich guys who can cut a big check for a headquarters, so ads for rich guys would be cool. I'd like to find some ads that can leverage the new video games, which all have a mythos of their own. I need people who know about those games and can discuss the mythos to come up with some clever catchphrases that will capture the video game players. So I need more ideas. Send me more ideas. I'm keeping this audio clip down to 10 minutes, so I'm going to start wrapping up. What I want to tell you guys about is a GoFundMe. I have set up a GoFundMe. I think it will not be shut down for a period of time because I've worded it very abstractly. So I need more help financing the ongoing campaigns, which can range anywhere from 20 cents per click to $1 a click. And some of these things are really quite effective. I'm also going to try to get a pool of money and explode the campaign out there when a national event happens that I can leverage for better effect on these ads. The ad is on GoFundMe. It's called Northwest Migration. I'll try to get Harold to put the link into some notes for this podcast so you guys can click on it. Get over there, sign up, send some money, donate a little bit of money, because we need to find Hell's Unicorn. We need to find many more people we don't know anything about. And folks, I'm not an ad guy. I'm just some nerdy guy who does computer stuff. And I decided, hey, I can do this because I can't quite get out of here yet. I'm going to get up there soon and I'll be a comrade one of these days. We need more boots on the ground, folks. We need to recruit. This is a great way to do it. So please help. Go to my GoFundMe page and let's get some ad going and get some more ideas going. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, I'll be attaching the link to Brian's GoFundMe to email notifications on this episode, and I'll also forward an email address for him to anyone who wants to help. Once Brian provides me with an email that does not contain his own first and last name, and that's something all of you need, by the by. All right, before we proceed, there are a few rather important inside baseball items that I need to throw in here real quick. Now, last week, some of you may have heard or heard of or seen on the net a story regarding an Antifa reporter spy infiltrating so-called white supremacist and alt-right groups in the Pacific Northwest and then doing a big expose on National Public Radio, among other places, about all our assorted horrid wickedness up here. Now, for those of you who don't have a program or a scorecard and therefore cannot tell the players, I need to tell you right off the bat that this was not the Northwest Front involved in this little fiasco. We were not the ones who were taken in and made fools of. That was two other groups affiliated with the alt-right, which we are not, called the Northwest Forum and True Cascadia. The so-called undercover reporter was not, in fact, an actual MSM journalist, but a, quote, young, blonde, gay, Swedish man. NPR's description, not mine. Now, this bugger boy was working not for the actual legitimate media, insofar as any media these days is legitimate, which isn't very far, but he was working for and being paid by an Antifa group out of London called Hope Not Hate. Hope Not Hate is almost certainly funded by George Soros, and it's run by a man named Jerry Gable. Now, I won't get into who Jerry Gable is, although our British readers will be all too familiar with him, except to say that he is arguably the ugliest little Jew that I have ever laid eyes on in my life. Now, have you ever read the Kafka novel Metamorphosis? Jerry Gable looks to me like a man who was somehow transformed into a giant cockroach. And I'm not exaggerating at all. That really is what he looks like. The sight of Jerry Gable makes my flesh crawl. The so-called white leader and group who was more seriously infiltrated by the Antifa spy was a faggot named Greg Johnson, who was part of a very large homosexual infestation of the alt-right. Now, I have referred to him before on here, or rather Lord Goyhammer and Sir Stephen have. Greg Johnson runs Countercurrents Publishing and apparently is the head honcho in something called the Northwest Forum. I am told that he has returned to Seattle from the San Francisco area for good now, although I'm not sure. Being homosexual, Greg Johnson is not and cannot be part of the white resistance movement in any way, shape, or form. And since he's not one of us, I don't keep up with his activities. True Cascadia is basically some alt-right guys in the area who chat with one another on the internet and occasionally get together for beach parties and in rented motel banquet rooms. Now, I'm not saying that in any derogatory way. That's what 99% of the alt-right does, with the occasional tiki torch thrown in. Hell, that's pretty much all that everybody does outside the Northwest Front. Now, when our party professionalizes and can give these guys what the Irish call a fire to warm themselves by, I suspect things will change. Now, for those of you who want to hear a full explanation of all this, I refer you to the Radio Free Northwest episode of July 27th of this year. Download it again and listen to it carefully, please. Now, I've met some of these True Cascadia people, and the ones I know aren't bad guys at all. The Northwest Front does not have any formal relationship or contact with True Cascadia, largely because of their association with the open homosexual Greg Johnson and their officially ambivalent attitude towards buggery in general. But I have good reason to believe that not everyone associated with True Cascadia goes along with the Spencerian dictum that loathsome perversions of the body are, quote-unquote, no big deal. At least some of those true Cascadia guys get that, yes, buggery most certainly is a very big deal indeed, and they are very troubled by certain tolerant attitudes towards certain very bad behaviors in our so-called leaders, which are prevalent on the alt-right. In other words, they still have healthy racial instincts. More than that, I'm not going to say. Now, I didn't bother actually to listen to the NPR expose on Johnson, since as a homosexual, his activities have nothing to do with us. But I've seen these things happen before, and so I know the drill. I just wanted to let everybody know that, no, this incident did not involve the Northwest Front in any way. Now, some of you saw the headlines on the internet and you freaked out about it. Don't worry. It's not us. You know what it strikes me I have not had on here for a while? Some Celtic rock. This is Runrig. Thank you.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing Nietzsche's famous lament, How One Becomes What One Is. Now, this work is written towards the end of Nietzsche's meteoric career, and it really reflects the era that was the aftermath of the Franco-Prussian War. So prior to the Franco-Prussian War, the German states were already starting to coalesce, but they really came together as a result of this conflict. So suddenly, Germany finds itself in a position of power. This is a very critical historical moment. And because Nietzsche is really such a visionary, a lot of what Nietzsche is talking about is not only about Nietzsche's career or Nietzsche as a personality, but how he's viewing Germany at this point. So Nietzsche talks about finding oneself or trying to find oneself, and I suppose Germany trying to find itself, and how if you're trying to find out about yourself, you have to dispense with all the illusions about who you are. So Nietzsche talks about his own personality and how he really cares nothing for worldly honors. So paradoxically, the philosopher who writes endlessly about the abandonment of Christian morals and the following of the various instincts and the will to power really has a life one might call monastic. And Nietzsche talks about how he's a sophisticate who is really more pan-European and indeed perhaps more French than someone who fits into the mode of patriotism in his day. Now, some people see this kind of comment as the view that Nietzsche might have been anti-German. And in a sense, I suppose he did not fit into the Protestantism and the provincialness of Germans at that time. So in a sense, that's true. I think he had a more, he definitely has a more, in a sense, as I said before, pan-European vision. Nietzsche does have his criticisms for Wagner, famously in this work. He sees Wagner as being subsumed within Germanic kitsch. Nietzsche talks about his own relationship with Wagner, his own addiction to Wagner's music, but he talks about how he's in recovery. And he reflects on the Dionysian quality that he once saw in the earlier works of Wagner. What Nietzsche really worries about in this book is what he calls idealism among Germans. What he means by idealism in this case, he's very concerned that Germans are easily led and they're gullible, and they really don't know what direction they should be going in the future, so they tend to be hedging their bets either way. Now, he sees that Germany has potential, and Nietzsche even imagines a new Napoleonic figure. In this case, he imagines that Germans might actually be in a position to take a leading role in the world, and he seems to want Germans to be successful. I think he's writing this because of his disappointment and his concern and his disillusionment at this point. But he's not sure that Germans are quite ready to meet that challenge. And he's particularly upset about Lutheranism because he sees the Lutheran movement as a reform movement that restored, at least temporarily, Christianity. Now, of course, famously, Nietzsche really dislikes Christianity, so he's quite guilty of one who goes on and on against Christian religion, and he sees Christianity as being against natural selection. Nietzsche quite rightly talks about how he's really split the history of thought, because all the philosophers that went before him, they all seem hopelessly ridiculous in comparison to Nietzsche, and they're even unbearable. And it's true, I must say, after reading as much Nietzsche as I have, I do try to read other philosophers from time to time, and I even discuss them on here. But after having read as much Nietzsche as I've read and realizing the importance of his work, it is hard to become an enthusiast for any other philosophers. Now, Nietzsche talks about how his work is essentially bait. He's looking for followers, but he's just not sure if, during his time, that there were any fish out there. He's really not sure if anyone really has understood his work. And in this brief lament, it really could almost sound as if Nietzsche is bragging, but actually everything he says about himself is quite true. He talks about how he ceased to be just a writer or a professor, but he's become an explosive persona. Now, often this brief work, this review of Nietzsche's career, is often taken as an attack on Wagner, but it's really just a warning that Germans are really too good-natured for their own good. They're very altruistic, and Nietzsche even talks about how the Germans were talking about how they might help Africans, for example. Of course, he laments how they're under the influence of Christianity, and this has really corrupted the politics and the social order of Germany as far as Nietzsche's concerned. But Nietzsche does state that altruism can still be utilized as a discipline. Nietzsche is, he's fair-minded in a respect. For example, he is against vengeance. He sees that as something degenerate and really something that is for the weak. And he talks about this notion of eternal recurrence that's very important to him, because he's always talking about how in order to get to the place that you are at this particular time, both for himself and for the world in general, and I would suppose for Germany, he talks about how you can't really dispense with anything from your past. So everything in the past has had a purpose, and that is why we must always will the past to be as it was. He talks about that this is part of the discipline of being a creator. Nietzsche talks about how he is without any contradiction, but once again he talks about how he fears that the Germans are often filled with contradictions. And he talks about how he uses the name Zarathustra in his work, and he starts to call himself Zarathustra in life because of Zarathustra being the first philosopher who believed in morality and the separation of good and evil, and thus would also be the first to renounce it, which Nietzsche calls the supreme deed, which is greater than anything else, even greater than the wisdom of Vedic priests. Well, Zarathustra rejects the old ideas, but still affirms the past as having been necessary. Nietzsche wants to, of course, liberate individuals from the unreal, and he wants to bring about new truths. But, of course, in order to do this, we cannot keep lying to ourselves. Nietzsche hopes to bring about the spirit of classical heroics. He tends to use a Greek vocabulary to talk about this, because once we accept the will to power, we'll see reality as it is. Nietzsche wants to bring about not only destruction, but he also wants to bring about joy. So he's going to, it's not just destroying what was in the past, but he sees this vision of something new. And it's going to be about more than petty happiness, which is what the world in his day and also in our day tends to offer us. So essentially, this book is really a call for self-questioning reflection, the kind that Harold is always talking about. And to me, it's really more about that than any falling out with Wagner. It's more about, as I said, the lack of readiness of the Germans to face reality. I think it's hardly necessary to harp on the historical significance of this. Nietzsche is really fearing calamity for the Germans because he thinks they're not embracing this new philosophy as much as they should be. So it's a study of a heyday when all seemed possible, and it's a warning that, in a sense, even though the harvest was coming about, perhaps German society at that point was not really ready for it. Now, this was one book that I decided to read because although I've read Nietzsche extensively, his various treatises, this one, for whatever reason, I hadn't read in the past, but it was something that I'd heard of so much, I'd read about so much, that I finally decided to read it. And I think the first part of it, it's almost like Nietzsche wants to tell people that there's nothing to see here. And then if you keep going into the work, he starts revealing in abstract terms this vision he has for revitalization of European society. And although he never quite expresses it in so many words, it seems like he has this very clear vision of a potential future. It's very much vintage Nietzsche's voice. Nietzsche had a lot of, as I say, a kind of self-confidence that could almost be seen as a kind of bragging or a kind of arrogance, but in his case, it was completely justified. So this is a fairly brief work, and it contains all of the various essays that references to his various essays. So it's an important historical work, and if you're very interested in Nietzsche, I would suggest that you read it. So have a good evening. Thank you for listening, and hail victory, comrades.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run. If you put hard on the pedal, son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got to run to make.
And greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from St. George, Utah, on the 1st of October. I guess from what I gather, it's supposed to be about a month till Antifa is going to, supposedly, from what I read, start nationwide civil unrest or civil war or whatever. You know, it's funny, they can go and supposedly get organized for a nationwide thing, but here we sit, y'all at home, wherever, not in the homeland. They can get organized, but we can't. They're all pissed off because all the conservatives or whatever put President Trump into office rather than lying Hillary. And you can imagine the state the country would be in then. All kinds of chaos and all that. But anyway, it just amazes me that they can get organized, but we can't. Because you're all, too comfortable where you're at. Maybe you made it need a hot poker in the rear to go and get activated and get doing something. Maybe they need to make it uncomfortable for where you're at, where you can't get to work. They go and they block your roads. They make it so the trucks can't get there. And who knows? But, you know, if they do manage to block enough roads and trucks can't get through there, your stores only have about 3 days worth of food in them. If the trucks can't get into them, they've got all the interstates shut down, and the trucks aren't going to go because they're going to get attacked. And I really don't want to risk mine and my wife's life, and for going through their crap. Yeah, I've got enough stuff to defend the truck for a little bit, but I don't want to go to jail over it either. But guaranteed, if any of the middle buggers are going to go and try to attack my truck, well, I'm going to defend it. I'd much rather be home in the homeland than out there doing that. So, just food for thought, because if they shut the trucks down, this whole nation's going to shut down. Now, if they really wanted to shut the nation down, I guess there's like 9 to 17 strategic transformers around the country, from what I've read in different books about power grid. All they have to do is take out between, well, less than 20 substations strategically placed around the country at the same time, and this country would be in the dark. And nothing happens in this country without power. So you need to really kind of like keep that in mind. So need to, well, one, migrate, but two, make sure you're stocked up with enough weaponry at home, food and water, to be able to survive for a little bit, because if this unrest happens, there's going to be a lot of looting and whatnot around the country at different stores and all that. So anyway, it was just a little food for thought from the road from St. George, Utah, on my way to California. All right, this is the trucker signing off for a short little one. Have a good one, comrades. Take it easy and hope to see you on the homeland, or road to the homeland soon.
Well, I'm now 18-wheeler rolling. We're gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch your bandit run.
All right, this is from Lloyd Goyhammer and Sir Stephen's podcast of last week on, I believe it's Radio Aryan. Anyway, they give the credit on there later. In the original podcast, they included a number of clips from my own first Brandenburg lecture thingy a couple of weeks ago on Radio Free Northwest. I decided to cut those out of this transcript, number one, because it would have made it too long, and number two, because rebroadcasting myself on somebody else's podcast is a little too narcissistic, even for me.
I think tonight, I think we decided that we're going to talk about Harold Covington's last cast he put out. It sounds like a combination of him getting frustrated and, I don't know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I don't know, it sounds like he's a little frustrated. I don't know if he's getting impatient, but if you've been around as long as he has, I mean, I'm sure he's seeing our windows of opportunity or our chances slipping away, and it's not looking good. We're being genocided.
I'll even take it a step further. I think it's Harold Covington's call to arms in a lot of ways. I'm not as versed in his past podcast as you are, but my history of him and him in the movement, I totally agree with him. I think he's getting to a point in his time and his age where he's getting flustered, frustrated. I think Harold's caught between time and the hour at hand, if you will, to a certain degree. I mean, he sees that Zog's clamping down. I think the machinations are happening, and I think he's really, like I said, it's more of a call to arms. It's one of the most moving casts that I've ever heard him produce, and I think it's very important, and it's important enough where I felt like we needed to give it a bit more focus and to give it a little bit more light and really kind of discuss it. A lot of the things that were stated in this particular podcast, we have been also touching base on Race and Nation for quite a time now. And I think it was just a good combination of his subject matter and a lot of the things that we have been talking about as well.
Yep, absolutely. I'm not going to split hairs with you at all. I'm just going to say, I wouldn't say it was like his best, but like you said, he's got about 7 years worth of podcasts, I think. This one is definitely, it's got a different tone to it. He's in your face. It's more like he don't give a shit anymore. He's getting to that point where he don't give a shit. This is definitely a fist in the face of Zog. And now he's kind of taunting him a little bit, maybe. I think we got about four clips. We're just going to play throughout the cast and just kind of comment on them a little bit. Yeah, we kind of want to do this because I don't feel many people kind of, I want to say they don't agree with them, but I don't think a lot of people out there, well, let me just say something real quick before I get into anything, because I don't want this cast to sound like we're calling anyone out, because we're not. We're not calling anyone out by name. We're not calling anybody out by organization, period. At no time throughout this cast am I referring to anyone in particular or anyone particular organization. This is very important because too many people get caught up in the black hole of undermining white unity. So that's one of the things. So I'll start out asking what white unity is, because I don't think we have it or not much of it. And right now I'm staring at the SPLC hate map, active hate groups in the United States. And right now we're at 892, which I think that's an old map.
It's in the 900s now.
I could probably list 300 or more pro-white organizations if I had the time. And what you doing, white man? Why so many organizations? I don't think that's unity whatsoever. I don't see that as unity, all these white organizations. I mean, alone, looking at this map, we got almost 185 that are just anti-LGBT and other. So basically anti-gay. Why are there 184? I don't know. I think there's too many out there. There is no white unity. We should all be under one or two or three banners at most. It's pure bullshit, and it smells of what, Lanzaboy? What's it normally smell as?
Controlled opposition.
And jury.
Jury.
I mean, I've been in this struggle for 2.5 decades in one form or another. Sir Lanzaboy here a little bit longer. I think to some extent we go through a period where we think we can save our race not only democratically but peacefully, which I think is dead wrong. Throughout history shows that only violence gets results, especially when it comes down to survival or land, living space, whatever. This always seems to happen on one level or another, but never enough on a scale where people are ready to risk and sacrifice everything for our survival and the survival of our families. I mean, we've always talked about living our day-to-day lives, going to work, coming home. You know, we got wife, kids, we got responsibilities, we got Little League, we got baseball games. It probably make us sick how many of us still watch sports ball and get in that bullshit. But because we have all these activities and all this materialistic shit to look forward to, I mean, I think that kills any spirit to take back what's ours. I don't know, what say you, Nigaroni?
I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think we're at a very important point in our existence, actually, and people, especially those who are vanguard like Harold Covington, are really seeing the writing on the wall. I've also have seen the writing on the wall, and we were often critical, though I've been accused often of punching right, and it's not as much as punching right as much as I'm trying to preserve what is white. And that has always been a huge issue for me. If there's foundational issues, questions about jury, then yes, often than not, it is very dismissive by people like myself and LG in any flag or banner that you fly. It doesn't matter if you're AR. It doesn't matter if whatever white identity politic organization you are attached to. And the time is, you know, nil, my brothers. I mean, it's getting to the point to where we can't sit here and nitpick each other anymore. At the same time, we have to have a strong foundation. It's a very tumultuous time. It's critical. It's getting to the point to where we cannot sit there and just submissively dismiss jury and faggotry. We have to vigorously do so as a foundational point, but at the same time, this common foot bullshit infighting crap that we entrench ourselves in has got to become something of the past. It's exactly what the Jews want us to do. It's exactly what Dave has set out to do. It's evident in everything I look at. It's evident in everything that we do, from fake Twitter bullshit fed accounts on Twitter to them monitoring us and deplatforming people. And I think people like Harold Covington and the things that have happened to Don Black, and yeah, to a lesser degree, even poor old Andrew England being denounced and also being deplatformed as well. Though I don't agree with everything that he stands for or represents, I do respect and warrant his need to exist, if you will. I don't want the Jew shutting him down because I don't want the Jew shutting any one of us down. No matter if we disagree or agree with them, it doesn't matter. We can get into that later. I think the end game result is, like I said, the time is becoming too critical. we're going to have, like we've said before, we're going to have to start finding the iron in our hearts to start finding the iron in our hands and taking action and doing something. It's going to be inevitable. And it's going to be, and you know what? And as much as we're shit on and down looked upon, it's going to be people like me and LG. And yeah, a lot of other people in the contingency and in the ranks that you probably wouldn't associate with on a day-to-day basis that are willing to shed blood for our race and culture. Those that are willing to put our lives on the line for our culture and race that you're not going to find in some of the other ranks and files in our movement. And that's going to really separate those who are living 14 and the 88, which people have been trying to separate lately, and I think that's bullshit, but that's a completely different subject. It's gotten to be so nitpicky and just so ridiculous, and I really think that Harold Covington coming back around and laying the foundation is something for us to build on, and that's why we're reflecting it on this particular show.
Yep, and whether you love or hate the guy, there's really nothing on him. The guy doesn't really have skeletons in his closet. The few things people got on him that they pass around via email, his bullshit shit talking by his fucking traitor brother or other family members or other people that have no shred of evidence whatsoever. All these political white nationalist leaders have it. Some are legit, some are not. I think Covington's one solid dude. Yeah, man, I was actually in a good mood, but now you kind of put me in a bad place with that little rant there, Lancer boy. Yeah, we are being systematically... Oh, before I forget here, dude, I mean, this is kind of like our one-year anniversary since we started Race the Nation. Did you want to comment on that real quick?
Yeah, we've had a... it's been a hell of a ride. Yeah, this show, more or less, I mean, it depends on you really investigate the dates or not, but more or less, we have come up on the cusp of our one-year anniversary. So Race the Nation has been in existence at this point in time for about a year. The show has definitely had some ups and downs, some turns and some twists, but we have always stayed true to our message, and the show is more or less just a journal of me and LG's existence, our day-to-day lives, and how two working-class folk families in Milwaukee chisel out an existence and try to live 1488 day in, day out. We weigh everything against the 1488. We literally try to honestly give a working class perspective on this show, and love us or hate us, we do appreciate the people that do listen and give us feedback. If you still want to get a hold of us, the best way right now is at racingnation@gmx.com, racingnation@gmx.com. You can also get a hold of us on our website if you'd like. You also check out our past archives, which I highly recommend people do, at lanzerandgoyhammer.com, lanzerandgoyhammer.com. Check out the archives. There's all kinds of links to Billy Roper's show, Radio Aryan. It's pretty interesting, good reads, and Lord Goyhammer's really good about getting information posted on there right away. So if you're interested in the show, I highly recommend you check out the website.
Yeah, and speaking of that, we kind of timed this poorly, I guess. I mean, I'm not even sure if we're going to get even to all the Covington. We have some cuts we're going to play from his last cast and kind of comment on them, only because I don't think many people will comment on them, and probably fewer will agree with them. No, and I've mentioned a couple times, it's no secret, me and Sir Lanzerboy here, we're basically making work for idle hands. We know damn well what needs to be done. We're not going to run out and do a Dylan Roof style. Nothing against him, but this isn't a one and done deal. We know what needs to be done. You got to prepare mentally and everything else. I mean, it's got to be a team play for this to work and to be effective and hurt these motherfuckers. We are being systematically genocide to one extent or another, and at different degrees throughout history, primarily by our ancient enemies, the parasitical, sponging, Semitic kosher rat. I used to listen to a lot more podcasts than I do now, but I'll keep hearing people comment, and like I said in the beginning, this isn't, I'm not punching right or left or whatever, all that shit's gay. Oh, before I get into that, what I was going to say is, don't fool yourself, and I've mentioned this. You know, we do this podcast because we're kind of making work for idle hands. We're waiting for the storm to break. And this is just my personal opinion. I can't even exactly speak for Sir Lanzerboy here, but I don't think for one second that this podcast is a weapon against any of our foes. I guess I see it as, like he always mentions, we are just two regular dudes. We're nothing special, nothing fancy. We work our hands to the bone. We've lived our whole lives in steel-toe boots and in rawhide leather gloves, hard hats, you know, throughout some point. That's just who we are. But not at any point do I think our problems or stifling our genocide through any sort of nonviolent, peaceful medium is going to work. You know what I mean? I just...
You're fooling yourself if you think that.
Yeah, this is not how we're going to do battle. This is not how I envisioned us doing battle. But there's nothing wrong. We need information. We need literature. We need stories. We need blogs. We need articles. We need newspapers. We need podcasts. We need information. We need to know that there are people out there that are willing to fight for this. This isn't my job. This, you know, when I go to bed at night or when I make my transition from this world to the next, believe me, I don't think I'm going to be judged by our descendants in the halls of our fathers by me having a podcast talking about our proms.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. And the flip side of that is that the digital medium for our message and the digital medium for white nationalism and national socialism is rather still a new concept. But what I don't understand is the disconnect from the older message or the older way of stylization where we were preparing for war. And now the youth that's coming up behind us is all just shooting out memes and hitting Twitter, and that's their revolution. I don't know if they can even see past that as saying, we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to separate and fight. Blood is going to be shed. Lots of lives are going to be lost. The Balkanization is not going to be some pretty peaceful segregation at some pep rally. It's going to be a horrible, treacherous, bloody mess. And as growing up as a youth, we were prepared for that. We were told that that's how it was going to be. And since then, and the internet and all this, whatever, that's been lost in the translation. And I think it's our responsibility, and obviously Mr. Covington's to a large degree, the vanguard, to say, no, that's not how it's going to be. Whether you think it's extreme or we're taking it too far, it's the truth. I wouldn't be doing you any service at all to sit here and spout off lies or conceptions or things that I think are just my view. These are things that are pretty much founded in almost any white identity, nationalism, literature, background, story, folk, precepts that you can find. From Rockwell to Lane, from Ados Mein Kampf, all the way down the line. It's always been laid out the same way. The common thread is that for you to make change as a white person for survival is bloodshed. It always has been, it always will be. That is the reality. But sitting there thinking you're going to get ahead in democratic circles is foolish. And I really wish as a whole, as a movement, we could stop supporting that. That is where I believe a lot of disconnect is between us and everyone else, is that a lot of us who claim that we're playing in democratic identity politics and claim that we're fighting for white survival are still trying to do it in democratic circles. That is never, ever, ever going to happen. That America that you know and the America that you grew up in and I grew up in is a dying animal. And no one put that together more articulately than Harold Covington in this week's cast. You really should pay attention to what he has to say. And I really do recommend you listen to it because the gentleman definitely is laying it out there for you. And it is nothing but truth. It's not a good truth. It's not a happy truth. It's not a fun truth. It's a truth you need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is reality. That is the reality that we're looking at.
Yep, exactly. And that brings me to what I wanted to bring up. Once in a while, I could probably count on two hands, maybe a dozen and a half times I've heard, and especially now, it's getting more and more popular, people bringing up the ethno-state. Well, or not bringing it up. Yeah, I guess it gets to the point where people are practically ignoring it for obvious reasons, which I'll get into. A lot of times I'll hear the ethno-state, which is, you're on the right path. Yeah, yeah. North America, dude, you're not taking it back. You're not taking back United States. You're not taking it back, the whole thing. You're not taking it back democratically. You're not taking it back peacefully. You can get on your knees, pray all you want. You can pour out all the mead from the horns to the gods all you want. It doesn't matter, dude. I can't really speak for the Christians, honestly. However, I think the only way to honor the old ones, the old gods, is through violence and bloodshed. There's no better way to show your love for the gods other than slaughtering the ones you hate and that are threats to our existence. But anyways, what I was getting to, though, I hear a lot of ethno-state talk. And then on top of that, I'll hear there's no plan for an ethno-state. And I don't understand that. I don't understand it. I've heard at least a dozen or so times that there is no plan for an ethno-state, which in my opinion can't get any more obvious in a sense that just seems so intentional in order to reflect the fact that, like Covington says, the gun has to be reintroduced into our political struggle and that not everybody is going to survive to see the fruits of our fight for existence. And they're not. It's a scary thought, but that's sacrifice. That's reality. That's what's been going on for millennium. Like we said before, our fathers, our brothers, our grandfathers, our nephews, our sons have all gone off at one point or another to fight for our existence and our freedom and our families, dude. It happens. I don't know why in this day and age, in these last 80 years, we don't think, I mean...
And out of all those wars... This war is going to be so much more different. And the aspect of that is because it's for our white survival. It's not because of some Zog-filled propaganda war against Germany. It's not some Zog-filled propaganda war against supposed communism threat in Vietnam. It's not because some Zog-filled propaganda bullshit Korean or North Korea war up to, you know, coming up down the pipe. This is different than any other war that's laid out in front of us because it's for our absolute survival. It's for our absolute being. It's for our absolute existence. And that is the huge difference between any other war in our current history, recorded history. Well, maybe not all recorded history, but it's because it's not just because some propagandized war against some, you know, made up entity or made up threat. It's going to be a war for our survival. It's going to be a war for our existence. And that is where the big difference lies. Like I said, a lot of people are just blissfully ignorant to all this. I get that. But when the Balkanization, just like I've said before in past casts that Mr. Billy Roper has put out, I do think there's going to be a handful of different Balkanization, you know, ethno states. And to simply just ignore that and some people and some conservative circles, if you will, to denounce said ethno state, that's sick. It's completely counterproductive to our movement. It has no place in our movement because an ethnostate in one form or another, in one place or another, is an absolute foundational imperative that has to be done, no matter what. Or we die. Or we die. That's it. Whether it's the Billy Roper Ozarks or Zarkia, as I think he likes to call it. I think he likes to call it Ozarkia. We kid around. We call it Ozarkia. Oh. Or it's Harold Covington's Northwest Front. We can sit there and be divisive all we want, but to sit there and simply ignore an ethnostate, then you're either a fool, you're either controlled opposition, or you're a moron. Take your pick.
And like we said in the beginning, I know I keep saying like I said, but I want to make it clear that we're not attacking the one. It's hard to watch what's going on. And that's all. It's nothing new, though. I mean, obviously, Covington's dealt with this in his generation, Rockwell in his generation. So it's not like this is a new phenomenon. It's just we're trying to battle this rut we get ourselves into. And it has a lot to do with democracy. And I think we're going to find justice and freedom in the 14 words to the lawyers and judges and through the Constitution and Bill of Rights. That don't mean shit. But what I was going to say, too, is personally, right off the bat, when we're talking about having to fight, personally, right off the bat, why is any of us even concerned with surviving this struggle on a personal level? Obviously, we're not suicidal, but I'm not in this for just me and mine. As National Socialists, I'm also just as dedicated for you and yours and everybody else, our kinfolk, and for the boundaries they reside in order for them to survive and prosper. So we got to get out of this like materialistic, selfish. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I've never actually really listened to any podcast where they talk about death. I'm not trying to sound like a hard ass saying like either I'm not scared of dying or I don't care if I die. Well, of course I care. I got a family. I worry about how they would survive or how they would carry on. Actually, my biggest fear is would they forgive me? Because a lot of our kinfolk and family don't understand the passion and love and what we want to do and what we want to build, which is so much more healthier and better for them.
Well, they follow our lead, too.
Yeah, of course they do.
So comes with that comes a responsibility.
If you don't think there is an actual plan, and this plan has been well thought out before Covington even started even talking about it or being the spokesman for it. So if you do not like Covington, this is not Covington's show. Covington is a spokesman. He's very well spoken. He is a writer. He's knowledgeable in literature. Okay, he's just good at what he does. Speaking and writing is what he does good at. And I don't know why anybody wouldn't want him at the forefront writing and talking about our struggles that we need to face. So, I mean, this Covington thing, just got to drop it. You love it, hate, fine, whatever.
But the Butler Initiative exists either with or without Covington. I think that's a lot of people get hung up on.
Yes, they do.
Whether you love the man or you hate the man, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. The Butler Plan is a good idea. The Butler Plan will work. The Butler Plan is actually in motion and is somewhat functioning, though the levels I imagine are smaller than what we would like. If you're ignorant enough to think there's something not going on in the Northwest, then you're a fool. It doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Whether you love Harold Covington or you don't love him, it doesn't matter. I have great respect for him as a Vanguard. I've never met the gentleman, but at the end of the day, the Butler Initiative that he has taken under his wing under the Northwest Front is a good and viable solution for our survival. Billy Roper's theory of balkanization and him kicking out in the Ozarks is, though I don't have the plan laid out in front of me, and though it's not as publicized as much as the Northwest Front Initiative, sounds like it is probably going to be a good and viable initiative for white survival in that area as well. You can't just, I'm not going to sit here and dismiss one over the other. We're foolish to think that there's not going to be several different balkanizations that happen in America. But what I'm saying is that at the end of the day, you really should take a look at this podcast from Harold Covington. The truth that he lays out really needs to be heard. Not by me. It's fallen on deaf ears for me. I agree with everything he says. But to the people who are sitting there still thinking that Democratic circles and arenas are a win-win solution for whites, and it simply is not. It simply is not. And as soon as you can disassociate yourself from that political process, as soon as you can disassociate yourself from voting and pulling levers and thinking that good old democracy is going to come by and save you, is when you start looking for other answers. And I don't want you looking for other answers when the shit's already hit the fan. I want you to look for answers now when you still have the time to abide, when you still have idle time at your hands to sit there and seek out an answer. Look for property. Look for jobs, relocate, network, PLE, Northwest Front, whatever. Whatever the solution you think might be, it's that time to do so now. And I think overall, that's the whole message we're trying to nail home. The political process, stop wasting your time. It's a waste of time. You sitting there wrenching your hands over the lever, and you wrenching your hands over what Trump's going to deliver for you with the wall is bullshit. It's not going to happen. And I also want to ring this message to my brethren and kin in the EU, especially those in Britain. I know you guys don't have a armed citizenry, and I know you guys are underneath the gun with this goddamn mass immigration Muslim Islamic filth shit. I recommend that you get together, PLE as much as you can, do what you got to do and prepare. And if the Northern England or Northern part of England, whatever you got to do, network, network, network. It's time to get off the, you know, computer and get off the internet in real life. And like I said, like Billy Roper says, getting in real life, networking with people. You guys in EU need it more than ever because that's pretty much all you got. Here in the States, we have a little bit more of a luxury just with the armed citizenry, but we're lazy.
And we're spread out.
We're spread out too far.
Yeah.
And we're completely subdued and brainwashed by mass media. So again, the Jews' method of operation is always different depending on where you're looking at across the world. But they do have a method.
Well, since you kind of touched on it a little bit, I don't want to put William the Balkanizer on the spot. I don't want to put the Jarl of the Shieldwall Network on the spot. But you brought up a good point because it's actually something I've never, and I've listened to all of Harold's podcasts. He's got 7 years of podcasts and I listen to them, and I have no reason to lie to you through a black snowball right now, believe it or not. Yeah, mine's white. Yours is black. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. But anyways, I've never heard anyone from the Northwest Front comment on this. Without a doubt, I think that's the most important initiative I think that's out there right now. It's the one that makes the most sense. And I think it's the only chance we have. But Covington in the past has mentioned multiple times, more than I can count. He has mentioned in Soviet Union back then was huge. You know, it's obviously it's huge. That broke up, but it broke up in many pieces too. Now, me and Lanzerboy here, and especially him being from Texas and Roper being from Arkansas, I believe he's been there all his life. Or at least that's where he's born. I don't know. I could be talking out of the side of my ass, dude, and taking the piss out of my own sail. We know, and I mean, Covington and them got to know, there are thousands of southern white boys with their fishing poles, with their shotguns, with their four-wheelers, and their jacked-up trucks and Confederate flags. They've got so much history and blood invested in that soil down there, they're just not going to move. I think that's pretty safe to say. I think Covington and Northwest Front and the Northwest Imperatives can have more than they need. They're going to have plenty of people once they lock and load and get on with this. But I think there's going to be a lot of people. And like I said, I don't want to put William the Balkanizer on the spot, but there's going to be a big Balkanization down there. It's going to have a lot of white boys in it.
Right.
And they need to be ready also. We got ideas for a cast coming up. We got to hash out the details because we're not sure. But regardless, and this cannot be repeated often enough. I'm just going to leave it at that with the south of the Mason-Dixon line. That's something we're going to have to talk to Roper about or what, because something's going to happen down there.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and those boys, I mean,
they're getting like tits.
Yeah.
They ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, and they ain't going nowhere.
I wish them the best. I mean,
I can't stand the heat. I don't feel that's like my natural habitat. Now, I don't have a globe in front of me right now or a map where I can trace the longitude latitude lines on the globe and see if the south is parallel with, you know, southern Europe and the Mediterranean states. It might be. I mean, Greece, you know, I don't want to sound stupid, but they look pretty hot sometimes and sunny and shit. But that's not it, dude. That's not in my blood. I'm Baltic and Scandinavian and Celtic, man. I need clouds. I need rain. I need chill. I need cold. I need snow. You know, I need that shit. If it was to balkanize, it'd be more than the NF, though.
Exactly.
Not to end it, but just, it cannot be repeated often enough. The Northwest Imperative is above all driven by one single and decisive factor, that being the complete lack of any other realistic alternative plan, not including William the Balkanizer's. Like I said, we'd have to talk to that, dude. I don't know how much bring it up.
Well, I mean, there's a huge difference between... There's a huge difference between Billy Roper sitting there theorizing about the breakup of America and the balkanization of America and the Northwest Imperative. Northwest Imperatives has a game plan. They have territory lines. If you read the books, obviously they're blueprints to more or less like how things would get done, form a government, national socialism, you know, things like that. I mean, there's things that are laid out in these books that tell you how things would run. I'm not going to sit there and put words in Billy's mouth
and say this and that and the other.
Mm-hmm. That's a definitely a conversation we should have. I don't know if they have an imperative or some kind of game plan, but definitely we should focus on that. I think that's a great conversation to be had, and we're definitely making some plans on Racing Nation to get that to come to a head, because I definitely think that's a conversation we definitely need to have.
Yeah, and I think we got a few more minutes, but I'm not ending it with this, but this is where we're at, and this is fact. What I was saying before, the Northwest Imperative is above all driven by one single decisive factor, that being the complete lack of any other realistic alternative plan to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Speaking of the balkanization of America, actually, my Haste in the Day books are en route. Mm-hmm. Not that you would read them anyways, but I'll let you know how they are.
Actually, I actually do have a couple of Mr. Roper's books that I have read.
Oh, you do?
But they're in storage. So like all my other books, they're always put away.
Yeah, and, you know, we might have brought them up a little too much. It might be a little too much for comfort, but we're not trying to put them on the spot. The reason, though, he definitely understands the Balkanization is coming.
Well, he's on the same page as us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like Harold is to us.
And I had to think long and hard, man. I think long and hard, you know, and it's almost kind of silly to think the only thing,
right,
the only place, you know, white people would congregate, right, would be the Northwest. No, the Northwest is actually, that's like more of a proactive movement, yeah, to like move things along, force them.
But the fallout from that's going to be other areas. The fallout from
Yeah. It could be. But, and then you got to think of the benefits. Two fronts are better than one front.
Exactly.
I mean, just imagine, and I don't give a f- if government's listening. They know. Do they know this? They've brainstormed all the possibilities.
Right.
They got us all on file. I'm not advocating nothing for nobody. And like common sense, you got to, if you got my constitution, I should be okay, because I didn't mention anyone specific. Yeah, well, William might be in a position where a lot of shit's going to go down in his area.
No, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? It could blow up to be a lot of work for him, but if anything, I mean, you need people like Roper.
So once again, if you need to get a hold of us, please email us at racingnation@gmx.com, racingnation@gmx.com, or you can just visit us at lanzerandgoyhammer.com, lanzerandgoyhammer.com. There is all kinds of awesome information, links to our archives, etc., etc.
But our time is up for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington 98310. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Underban. Freedom.
Still is beating heart.